CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, the workshop offers an unusual departure in radio drama, a free adaptation of 14th century Japanese theater based on Arthur Whaley's translations of the classic No plays of Japan, adapted by Harvey Marlowe. Music composed and conducted by the noted Japanese composer, Oxindo. There is a rock which stands at the gates of the shrine on the highest peak of Mount Katsuragi. On this rock is written, "Whosoever of all mortal men, whether he be king or slave, if he turn his heart to me, I will send the light to lead him and guide him on his way."
I am Lord Hojo no Tokioi, ruler of all Japan. But today my heart is heavy. The prayers at the temple are of no avail against the illness that has overtaken my wife, mother to the heir to my throne. Perhaps a pilgrimage to Mount Katsuragi will serve her better than all these prayers here at the temple.
So he arranged with the temple priests for a pilgrimage to begin on the morrow. Clad in the holy habit of the priests, with only his honored short sword strapped to his side, he went to take leave of his wife.
I have come to say goodbye, for I am soon starting on a ritual mountain climbing.
God be with you. I have heard that it is a dangerous ritual. Shall you take our son with you?
It is not a journey that a young child could make.
Well, I pray you will come back safely.
And I will pray for your good health. I must go now.
My lord, I have something to say.
What is it?
I would go with you to the mountain.
No. No, how could you leave your mother when she is not well?
It is because my mother is ill that I would go with you to pray for her.
My dear wife, your son says he would come with us. What is to be done?
Ishiwakamaru, when your father leaves, I will have none but you at my side. I have not had you out of mind or sight for as long a time as it takes a dewdrop to dry. Give me back the measure of my love. Let your love keep you with me.
This is all as you say. Yet nothing shall move me from my purpose. I must climb this difficult path and pray for your health in this life.
They saw no Four score or more, priests, pilgrims, the ruler of all Japan, and his son. The way was rough and torturous, the elements showing no respect for the pilgrims, nor the ruler of all Japan. For the winds howled and the thunder rolled down the mountains. The rain and the sleet wetted them so that they were all a shiver. And then the hail, the size of hen's eggs, smote them, and they all cowered and sheltered the rocks. And Lord Hojo no Tokioi, noticing his son faltering more than the rest, ordered the pilgrims to halt and take shelter.
We have climbed so fast, we are already near the summit. We will stay here and rest for a while.
My lord, we gladly obey.
Father, I have something to say.
What is it, my son?
I do not feel well.
Quiet, my son. Let not the priests hear you talk so, lest the spirits of the mountain take offense at our coming. Perhaps you are merely tired because you are not used to climbing. Lie there.
Rest, but the boy was not merely tired from climbing. He was deathly ill. And soon the color ebbed from his face. His complexion was of the coloration of the rocks around him. The priests and the pilgrims grew restless, and as they grew restless, they grew fearful. They muttered amongst themselves, and they commissioned the priest to speak strongly to Lord Hojo no Tokioi.
The pilgrims are saying that your son is indisposed.
He is not feeling well, but there is nothing wrong with him. He's only tired with climbing.
So you are not troubled about him?
No. He will arise refreshed and ready to resume the climb in the morning.
But the pilgrims would not readily accept this reassurance. All night they burnt incense and chanted the scriptures. In the morning, they gathered around the child and they saw that he was no better. Again they grew restless and then fearful, and they muttered among themselves, and again they commissioned the priest to speak with Lord Hojo no Tokioi.
O Master, ruler of all Japan, last night you said this boy was only tired from climbing, but now he is looking very strange.
So I say it with dread. There has been from ancient times a custom that those who fail in this climb should be cast down. All the pilgrims are saying that he should be thrown into the valley.
Would you hurl this innocent child into the valley?
It is the custom of the god of Kumano.
It is a mighty custom. I cannot gainsay it.
Then the pilgrims sighed for the sad ways of the world and the bitter ordinances of it, made ready for the hurling. Foot to foot they stood together, and Tokiyori, too, amongst them. Heaving blindly, none guiltier than his neighbor. The piercing cry of the falling boy emblazoned deep in the mind of Tokiyori, echoed again and again from mountaintop to mountaintop, from pilgrim heart to pilgrim heart. Like a madman, he stood there and had to be restrained lest he leap after the falling boy. And the winds howled and the thunder rolled down from the mountaintop. With anguished face raised high to the gods above, he vowed to forsake all worldly goods and to dedicate himself to eternal earthly wandering until his flesh became spirit and merged with the light of his son. He unbuckled his honored short sword and flung it far into the valley to rest forever beside his son. And then, as a lowly priest, he set out on his lonely wanderings and would brook no one addressing him as Lord Tokiyori. And soon no one any longer knew him as Lord Tokiyori, ruler of all Japan. 4 years passed. 4 years of wandering. 4 years of not forgetting. 4 years later, he again found himself in the valley at the foot of Mount Katsuragi.
Ara, it is snowing again. I must seek shelter here.
The curtain of snow parted, and there, not many feet from where he stood, lay a windswept excuse for a house. He knocked and called.
Is there anyone in this house?
Who is there?
I am a pilgrim. Pray let me lodge here for the night.
That is a small thing to ask, but we have no lodging fit for you. We cannot receive.
No, no. I do not care how poor the lodging may be. Pray, let me stay for this one night.
We would gladly ask you to stay, but there is scarcely space for us with our husband and wife and the boy whom I call son. You had best be on your way before the daylight goes.
So you are resolved to turn me away?
I am sorry for you, but we cannot shelter you.
Peace be with you. I will go my way.
Alas, it is because in a former life we neglected the ordinances that we are now come to ruin. Please let him stay.
You are of that mind.
Why did you not speak before?
Holy man, we will give you lodging. Though mean the shelter, rest with us till day.
Gladly he took shelter with them and shared with them their food. But alas, he also shared with them the cold. For it was no warmer in the hut than without. And the cold wind from the woods blows sleep away and the dreams of recollection. And on the morrow, with a gray of dawn as he had made ready to take his leave, he said,
"There is something I must ask. I would gladly know to what clan my host belongs.
Indeed, I have no reason to conceal it. Know then that Tsuneyo Genzayamon, Lord of Sano, has sunk to this.
How came it, sir, that you fell to such misery?"
"And thus it was. Kinsmen usurped my land, and so I became what I am."
"Why do you not go up to the capital and lay your case before the Shiken's court?"
"By further mischance, it happens that Lord Hojo no Tokiyori himself is absent upon pilgrimage, lo, these past 4 years. And yet, all is not lost. For on the wall, a tall spear still has an armor with it, while in a stall a steed is tied. And if at any time there came word from the city news of peril to our master, then, broken though it be, I would gird this armor on, and rusty though it be, I would hold tall this spear, and lean river though he be, I would mount my horse and ride neck by neck with the princess.
But alas, another fate awaits me, worn with hunger, to die.
Take courage. You shall not end so. If I live, I will come to you again. Now I must go.
Then take this boy I call my son to guide and protect you on your way.
Yes. I am strangely drawn to him. He is like my own son had he lived. You have good cause to be proud of him.
As much as if he were of my own flesh. 4 years ago, we found him wandering in the valley. Neither he nor we knowing whence he came from, nor how. Strapped to his side was his honored sword.
And then Tokiyori knew that his pilgrimage was over, and he embraced the boy. But he did not reveal himself, but merely said he would be glad to have him as guide and protector. And he turned to Suneo and his wife.
Though my longing bides with you.
You leave us?
Farewell. You have made me happier than you know.
Come back to us soon.
He said no more. He went his way. He sent to leave them and they to lose them from their sight. They traveled many roads together, prayed at many temples and read the scriptures together. And a bond grew between them, such as father and son. But still he did not reveal himself. Daily he versed him in the science of state, in the expression of poetry, in the arts of battle. He taught him the overhead slash, the ten-side cut, the eight-side sweep, the body wheel, the Hanyu turn, the flower double, the blade drop, the maple leaf double, and the gnashing lion. He taught him to be nimble on his feet, but never to retreat. And then the winds abated. The snows melted and the rains came. And soon the cherry trees were in full blossom. They had traveled hard and they traveled fast. And then, weary with travel, they came to the inn of Akasaka in the country of Mino.
Welcome, O holy priest. You grace my house with your presence. And you too, noble young prince.
We thank you for your hospitality. But I am no prince.
Oh?
Merely a pilgrim in company of this holy priest.
Oh, be that as it may, you're doubly welcome. While my good wife prepares some hot food for your stomach, do come and meet my other lodgers and listen to the sweet voice of Tonoi. She's renowned for all of Mino. Pleased to meet Kichiji and Kichiroku, merchants of Mino. I'm sure they will pleasure your presence on the journey tomorrow.
You are many times welcome. This area is infested with robber bands who prey on merchants such as us.
We cannot hope to outnumber them, but perhaps they will not impede our journey if we travel together with the holy man and so stalwart a young protector.
We join you gladly. This sword that serves this holy man shall serve you as well.
Then join with us in some food and wine.
It seems the geisha girl would approach us. Come closer, girl. What would you say?
I have words of warning for you.
Then speak without fear. We listen readily.
Be on your guard, gentlemen, for the outlaw Kunosuke has got wind of your coming and the gold you carry and has sworn to set his brigands upon you tonight.
All is now lost. What are we to do?
How can we defend ourselves against the hordes of Kumasaka?
Let them come in what force they will. Yet if one stout soldier go out to meet them, they will not stand their ground, though they be 50 armed men.
What can one mere stripling do against so many?
Perhaps we can trade them our gold for our lives?
Nay. You shall walk over many dead bodies ere you have to give up your gold or your lives. Holy man, give me your blessing ere I go.
Go, my son. Go with God. And remember well the lessons I have taught you. And know this too, ere you go. 4 years ago, my son was lost to me. But the gods were kind. I found him again in Suneo's house. The boy embraced his father and then turned to the others.
Now arm yourselves as best you can and wait here. I will go out to meet them.
And while he spoke, evening passed to darkness. He found himself a place where only three or four could pass abreast, and waited. The night was still. No sound but the crickets and the quick breathing of the boy. The moon was bright and cast many fearsome shadows around him. But neither evil spirits nor evil men could chill the heart of little Ushiwakamaru, son of Lord Hojo no Tokiori, ruler of all Japan. And then, a wave of sound, of horses and men were on the way. In they rushed, each jostling to be first to cut down the stripling. More of them and more than a wild onslaught. Not even the god of Pharaoh had dared to face them, but little Ushiwakamaru showed no fear. He drew his belt sword and met them. The lion pounced, the tiger leaped, the spear pounced. He carried them all. The body wheel, the Hanyu turn, the flower double, but they could not prevail. 30 there were who attacked him. Now 13 lay there who were dead. And others, wounded, flung down their swords and slunk back weaponless to report to Kumasaka. And then Kumasaka cried,
"What demon of God can he be under whose hand all these have fallen? For a man he cut on me. Sir Kumasaki Chohan be worsted in the night of rain. Where could he then hide his shame? If he be but spirit covered with flesh, I will cut him asunder or die with my men. Come, robbers, to the attack!"
Voice he called them to him, and they, raising their war cry, leapt to renew the assault. Fast as the wind they were, none daring to overtake the merry Kumasaka, lest they be the first to meet the lightning thrust of Ushiwakamaru's blade. And suddenly, there he stood, waiting. So tiny he appeared against the tall mound of flame bodies. Yet so unperturbed he seemed, Kumasaka's heart was chilled with the sight. But he measured by eye Ushiwakamaru's 2-foot blade against his 5.5-foot sword. And he thought, be he mortal or hobgoblin, demon or god, tonight's battle will be fought in hell. And he forced wild laughter from his throat to ward off the chill in his heart and perchance to frighten the boy. But none of his men joined him. All stood silently by. Slowly they merged in a circle of battle, each waiting for the other to spring. Wherever they circled, cautiously they moved. And so they fought. Now closing, now breaking. Again and again, Kumasaka strikes. Again and again, his blows are parried. And then Kumasaka, deeply versed in the art of the battle sword, lunged with his left foot, and in quick succession, he executed the ten-side cut, the eight-side sweep, the body wheel, the hand turn, the flower double, and Ushiwakamaru countered with the blade drop, the gnashing line, the maple leaf double, and the burst. Thus a thousand bouts they fought, neither wearied, ever strong. And then Kumasaka, losing patience, threw down his battle sword and spreading out his great hands, rushed wildly forward. But Ushiwakamaru dodged him as he passed, mowed around at his legs. Kumasaka fell with a crash. And as he struggled to rise, the belt sword of Ushiwakamaru smote him clean through the waist. And Kumasaka, that had been one man, lay cloven in twain. Then Ushiwakamaru, mounting Kumasaka's steed, made his way back to the inn. Lord Hojo no Tokiyori, overjoyed at the safe return of his son and his miraculous accomplishments, had this to say.
Now that I have a son to share my throne with honor and serve my people with integrity, I would return to my wife and to the affairs of state. When the pale moon fades from this night sky, We will pursue our way toward the capital.
That very morning they set out on their way and reached the capital without further mishap. And there was great celebrating and rejoicing awaiting them. There were fireworks and cannon, parades, entertainments and pageantry, feasting and much spilling of wine. The temple bells tolled for the safe return of the ruler and the young prince. And heeding their call, the ruler, his wife, and the young prince forsook the rebel wings of the populace and spent 2 days fasting and praying to the great God of Kanto. And when they returned from their meditations, he issued a proclamation.
This public notice is hereby posted. If there be those amongst you who would challenge my return to rule this land of sunrise, then mass your armies and declare your aims. Or if you be of a mind to serve your ruler loyally and true, then come in full regalia and receive my blessing and my love.
They came from far and near, barons and dukes, lords and masters, chamberlains and chancellors, samurai and soldiers, pilgrims and priests, farmers and merchants, fishermen and sailors, freemen and slaves. They came on horses, fat with fodder, on rickshaws, rickety and worn, in carriages resplendent, in clothes raggedy and torn. And along with them rides Sumail, haggard and wan. The horse is old, it cannot hasten, neither whip nor spur can urge it on. His armor is dented, worn and dusty, his spirit is tall, corroded and rusty, but he moves like a man dedicated to serve his ruler, his country, with determination and nerve. Many a road was traveled, many a day had set to rest until all were assembled in the great courtyard of the palace. And the ruler called to his attendants.
Have the samurai, the lords, and nobles all arrived?
Yes, my lord, they have all come.
Among them should be a knight in broken armor, carrying a rusty sword and leading his own lean horse. Find him and bring him to me.
I tremble and obey, your majesty.
He ran without catching his breath, and amongst the richly clad nobles he had no trouble finding Sumail. He was led to where on a great dais all the warriors of this levy were assembled like a bright bevy of stars. Row on row they were ranged, samurai and soldiers, nobles and lords, bejeweled and resplendent. Swift, scornful glances, fingers pointed, and the noise of laughter met his entering. His rusty sword sags and trails, yet undaunted he kneels at the foot of the throne where sits Tokiyori of the young prince.
Silence!
My lord, I have come.
He has come indeed. Sumail, lord of Sano. Have you forgotten the priest 2 months you sheltered from the snowstorm and the boy you once called son?
My lord, I am overwhelmed.
You have been true to the words that you spoke. Now I shall be true to mine. Now all ye hear this. In the case of Tuneo, I return to him his land, his title, and his deeds, and add to this my eternal gratitude and devotion.
Then Sumail bowed low before the ruler of all Japan, embraced the young prince, the one he once called son. And then, broken though it was, he girded his armor on. And rusty though it was, he held straight his spear. And bony though it was, he mounted his steed and went proudly his homeward way.
You have been listening to a free adaptation of early Japanese theater written by Harvey Marlowe. Featured in today's cast are William Conrad, John Daner, Hans Conried, Virginia Gregg, Barry Flynn, Ben Wright, Joe DeSantis, Corin Thatcher, Henry Blair, David Frankham, and Yoshiko Niya. Authentic court music by the Tenrikyo Kyokai Musicians. Choral group from the Japanese Union Church of Los Angeles. Original music composed and conducted by Chuck Shindo. CBS Radio Workshop was produced and directed by Harvey Marlowe. This is the CBS Radio Network.